Hey guys, welcome to Heal, Survive, and Thrive. This week we have Angela, who is a psychologist and personal coach with decades of experience working with kids, families, and trauma survivors. She is a childhood divorce survivor herself and has dedicated most of her career to helping struggling kids and families cope with this transition. You can find her at her website on changethetidecoaching.com.
Hey guys, thanks so much for joining me today. I am joined with Angela, and we're going to start diving into, I think, a really great topic because I'm going to raise my hand and say, I'm a survivor. I've been through this and I know the impact that it had on my life. So we're going to talk about childhood divorce and how that has affected us as adults finding healthy relationships. Angela, what do you think is one of the biggest struggles that, you know, adults have, or teenagers, young adults, you know, 55, 26, it doesn't matter, has when they've experienced divorce?
I think the main thing that happens, at least in my mind, is that, you know, everything kind of comes to a screeching halt as far as the learning what a normal and maybe healthy / approximation of healthy adult relationship, right? So you're raised by both parents, and then all of a sudden both parents are not there anymore. And so you kind of lose a lot of opportunities just to see how an adult relationship or a marriage progresses over time. And I think those kids that don't have parents that divorce when they're kids, you know, see the progressions over time of good times, bad times, you know, and us survivors of divorce really see, like, okay, maybe it was good for a while and then it was bad and then it was over, right? And, right. You know, I think that really does have an impact on how we see adult relationships kind of playing out in our own lives. And maybe we kind of, in some ways, repeat that history.
I think for me personally, I think it stinks because depending on the age of the child is a huge factor in terms of how it affects you. And if abandonment then does come up because of that, even if parents divorce and both parents are in the child's life, even if one strays a little bit and now you only have, quote, that visitation, that is abandonment. And I think people, when I talk about, you know, emotional wounds and, traumas and things like that, I think people don't often realize, they look at these emotional wounds and things that we've gone through having had to have been something really, really traumatic, right? When we think of trauma, we think of a car accident, 9/11, you know, all of these things. But I'm like, you know, even mom and dad dropping you off at daycare, that's abandonment, you know? And that's sad to say, because we have to do it sometimes, and especially in the world that we live in. But, so when divorce happens and that separation happens, you're right. If it's something that isn't healthy, and I don't think a lot of divorces do end in a healthy way. You know, they've come to this point where there's been a trail of dysfunction that's probably happened, whether it was arguing or not even just the arguing and the yelling, which was, you know, predominant in my situation, but really just maybe even the not acknowledgement of anything. And, you know, dad's in another room, or mom's, you know, not speaking to dad, even that kind of dynamic, I think, like you said, has a huge effect on what we deem as normal, you know, relationships. This is the way a relationship is supposed to be, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think even logically, the thing that I see a lot with myself and with my clients is, as we become adults, we logically understand that this isn't right. You know, like, we shouldn't be passive aggressive, or we shouldn't behave in this way, but we just do it because it is part of what we've seen and it's part of how we're programmed. So, what do you think is something that can help someone that is struggling with finding a healthy relationship and has gone through divorce, whether they experienced it in childhood or perhaps even just have gone through a divorce themselves?
Sure. Yeah, I really think, you know, again, like a lot of us, you know, are in and out of relationships over the course of our lives. And I think, you know, it can be really easy to just, like, keep doing the same thing over and over again, and, you know, kind of wondering why we're getting the same result, right? Wondering why, you know, we're falling madly in love and, you know, being in a relationship or getting married and then divorced, or, you know, even if it doesn't raise to that level. But I think, like, just taking a moment, you know, to reflect on, okay, what is my relationship history, right? What is the pattern that I'm seeing? You know, okay, maybe take pen to paper, right? And write, okay, I was with so-and-so for this long and this is how it ended. And then I was with so-and-so, right? Like, I think just taking some time to like reflect on what is my relationship pattern, right? And then I also think of in terms of like attachment, right? I mean, I think attachment is affected kind of, that's what I was thinking about as you were talking is, you know, that regardless of which parent leaves or how our parent's divorce ends, like it impacts our attachment to that parent, which again, we know that there is a connection between parent-child attachment and the attachment style that we have in our own adult romantic relationship. So, you know, I think just reflection is valuable, very valuable in that we can really kind of identify, you know, through our history, what are my habits? What are my patterns? And where might I be kind of missing the mark? I don't know that many people pause and reflect. Again,
they just go on autopilot.
Yeah, we're creatures of habit, you know, and we're all guilty of this. You are, I am, you know, I mean, nobody's perfect, but, you know, I mean, I think, you know, either our relationships are going to be the things that teach us these things and, you know, what we want to change or what we want differently out of our relationships, or sometimes when we're single and alone, that's like the perfect opportunity to reflect on, okay, where have I been and where do I want to go?
Yeah, I know, absolutely. 100% agree. You know, I really think as you were talking about like the patterns and attachments and things like that, I always find it interesting because, you know, and this might be a little Freud, I think, I don't know, but, you know, I think you do attract the people that you need to heal from. So I've attracted both mom and dad. I'm so happy. Hopefully I'm done. But I think that you know, however that divorce has affected you in terms of your relationship with that parent and you craving the attention because maybe dad's not around as much anymore, or because maybe mom's working really, really hard because now she has to support a whole household by herself, and you're feeling the, whether it's abandonment, whether it's, you know, dad isn't emotionally there for me because he's got his own stuff going on and all of that stuff. I think that you do, as you get older, want to heal that relationship by attracting those partners. I mean, that's what we're attracted to, right? Is what we're familiar to, whether we recognize it or not. It's the nature of the beast. It's weird how it's like that, you know, especially when I see people that will say, well, you know, my dad was an alcoholic and he was a functioning alcoholic, you know, so he went to work and he wasn't, you know, raging and hitting me or anything like that, but he definitely drank a lot. And now my husband, you know, does this or whatever, you know, you just see these like patterns of, wow, that's a little bit of mom. That's a little bit of dad, because it's what you've always known. And especially when, the dynamic wasn't healthy. It's so crazy to me that we can still be attracted to that just because that was our experience.
Yep. 100%. Yeah. I mean, and you are right with Freud. It's he called it a repetition compulsion. So not to get too, you know, psychology.
I love it.
You're right. Yeah. I mean, he called, you know, again, this, you know, repetitive behavior, right? This like compulsion to kind of reenact the past. Right. And yeah, I mean, you kind of said like, hey, I married both mom and dad. And yeah, I think my dad left, right? And mom, you know, I was raised by a single mom who worked as a nurse and worked, you know, a million hours to be able to support us. And, you know, over time, I attracted emotionally unavailable men, right? Like not a surprise there, right? And then, you know, then I got to my current relationship and he was actually emotionally available. And I was like, wait a minute, what the heck is this? You know? And so I tried my best to like push him away, sabotage the relationship. And, you know, but he stuck around, right? He let me work through all of that. And then, you know, we're still together today, right? So it's possible to be able to repeat history. But if you have a partner that's willing, you know, if you say, look, this is my history, you're different from that, and I just don't know what to do with that. And I was very honest with him about that, you know, and he was like, okay, well, I love you and I'm going to stick by you and we'll get through this. And here we are, you know, 5 years later, right? So, you know, I'd like other people out there to have that success story. You know, I'd love people to to have and choose and have partners that love them through their process, right? Because everybody comes into a relationship with something, right? We've all got baggage from our past, right? I mean, I've not met one person, and I'm sure you haven't either, right, that doesn't have something that they carry with them through their lives. And, you know, that's why I kind of wanted to start a coaching program specifically for childhood divorce survivors, because it's like, I know your struggles. I've lived your struggles. And I consider myself a success story, right? I consider myself somebody who was able to reflect on the past and move forward into the future, acknowledging, hey, yeah, I'm damaged, right? I have baggage. I have, you know, all of this other stuff. But if you find a partner that's willing to love you through those challenges and love you through, you know, to the other side of, yes, I'm lovable. Yes, I can have a good, healthy relationship, right? And then it seems, based on what, you know, I've researched about you, you've kind of gone through that process also.
Yeah. I think a huge component of everything that you're talking about is self-worth. So, you know, I always say self-worth is before confidence, is before self-esteem. It's above all that, because if you don't feel worthy of a great relationship, then you are going to sabotage it. And as much as someone is wanting to love you and be there for you while you work through it, you're not going to allow it because you've deemed yourself unworthy of having a great relationship. You know, and I think once you've kind of tapped into that level of, you know, good, having healthy self-worth, like, hey, wait, yeah, this is where I came from. Yeah, this is what I experienced, but I don't want that. And I think most people, especially, you know, if you've gone through divorce and you were a child and you experienced all of that and you saw unhealthy dynamics, I really think even, and you know this, I mean, you do this for a living, and you worked with children, that children sense it. You know what I mean? Like, you've gone through your own stuff. And I know for me personally, when I was a child, seeing healthy dynamic, even though it became part of my programming and it became part of what I thought was acceptable and it became part of how I interacted with men, you know, and how I had a disagreement or how I saw my behaviors being my mom or being my dad or shutting down or whatever it was. And I think that when you're a child and you see this, you do sense, especially as you get older, especially as you're in that like 7 to 12 range, you sense that's not okay when mom and dad are doing that, right? You don't know what it probably should look like, but you know that, yeah, I don't think mom should be yelling. Right. And I don't think dad should be behaving in that way. Maybe it's an old soul and that maybe that's what I am, but I do feel like children do sense those kind of things. Like, they do Absolutely. Understand right from wrong, even though they've been programmed to just see wrong. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it makes me think, it's like, you know, if people were to ask me like, what's your memory of the divorce? Right. And of course I didn't go to court with my parents and I wasn't part of that process. Right. But my last memory before the divorce was a big argument between my parents, you know, and somebody got shoved against a wall, right? I mean, and I remember that memory just like it happened yesterday, right? Like that memory is fresh in my mind. And that's where it ties back to that idea of divorce being trauma, right? It's on the ACEs list, adverse childhood experiences list, right? And I think along your recent point, right, I realized at that moment in my mind, like, this is not okay, right? Like there's something that's very uncomfortable about this, right? And I think the other thing is, not that my parents, I mean, thank God my parents were not violent towards us as kids, right? But, you know, it does, I think, naturally inflict that fear of who's next, right? Like, are they going to come after me, you know? And then the kids were kind of tiptoeing, you know, walking on eggshells, trying to be on their best behavior and avoid what they foresee as maybe potential, you know, getting hit, getting slapped, getting, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I 100% agree. You know, people ask me all the time, how do I find a healthy relationship when I've never been in one, when I don't know what it looks like, you know? And I mean, I've been there, you know, we've all been there, you know? So what do you think in your mind is steps towards finding a healthy relationship when you've never had one and you don't even know what the outline should even look like for it?
You know, I'd have to say the things, just reflecting on personal experience, and granted, I'm a little biased just by nature of what I do for a living, but I mean, I wouldn't be where I am today if it weren't for therapy, right? And mom got us right into therapy after the divorce, right? She's a nurse, she's a healthcare professional. She was very proactive, got us into counseling as the divorce was happening. And I have lived on this idea, right? And I became a psychologist because of my parents' divorce, you know? And I just firmly believe that therapy and if you're not, if you're not okay with the idea of therapy or counseling, then I think coaching can also help in this area. But I would pick one or the other, if not both, at some point. But I can honestly say, like, I've been in therapy for the majority of my life, right? And, you know, I can't say that this has been, an easy, quick, like, I woke up one day and I found myself in a healthy relationship. It has been a bumpy, messy looking road, right? But I was willing to do the work. I was willing to be vulnerable with multiple therapists over the course of my life and unpack all of this stuff and, again, decide what do I want to leave in the past and what do I want to bring forward with me? And that is possible, but I think it would be difficult to do alone. Again, whether it be with the help of a coach or a therapist, I really feel like that those services are kind of essential to just, again, developing that insight into those relationship patterns and building your self-worth and that confidence in order to feel good enough to pursue a healthy partner, a healthy relationship.
Right. I think, it's funny because I always think that you have to experience enough pain for you to, quote, wake up. For you to want to do the work. So you said, like, I was willing to do the work. A lot of people are ready to open the window because they for whatever reason, maybe they've experienced so much pain that they just can't take it anymore, which was my case. I mean, I went into like 3 months of a depression and I was like, wait a minute, I'm not a depressed person. Like, where did this dip just happen? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it was years and years of not dealing with what I really was feeling or what I was really going through. You know, I was ashamed of what I had been through and who I was and why I was this way. And okay, I'm highly sensitive. Okay, I'm very, empathic and I'm codependent. And, I didn't know any of that stuff. So I always say YouTube and podcasts and reading and blogs and like all that stuff that we now have online that is just, I think, fabulous is all the education. You know, like I always tell people, YouTube is free coaching. You know, everyone's on there and they're giving you all this information just for you to know, oh, what does manipulation look like? Oh, what does passive aggressive behavior look like? Because a lot of the things that I think we experience from seeing these unhealthy relationships, it's for me, I always like to label it. It's like, okay, that's what that is. So I can spot it next time rather than just experiencing it and knowing it's weird, knowing it's wrong, but not knowing how to handle it or not knowing what to do with it, mm-hmm. So, but I went through enough pain that all of a sudden I was like, something needs to change. And, first it was learning about dynamics between people. It was like, sitting on the couch and it was talking about dad and it was like having a good cry and letting it all out. And then it was kind of like, this is the way I am because of this. Okay. And then this is why my relationships are like this, this is why I attracted you, who is very unhealthy. And accepting responsibility for all the people that I've ever attracted, they have me in common. So taking responsibility for that, and then willing, like you said, to do that inner work that says, not what's wrong with me for why I attracted you, but what do I need? What do I want to change for me to be a healthier person so that doesn't happen again? Or if it does happen, that I know how to handle situations. Like you said, it was a messy road. It is sometimes, and I always tell people, because people have these fears when they've ended these unhealthy relationships, whether it was someone who's narcissistic or whatever the case is, I don't want to make the same mistake again. I'm sure you hear that all the time. I don't want to go through that all over again. You might. You might, because maybe the next person is going to teach you another level or another layer to what you need to learn. But the important thing is, how do you handle it? How do you overcome it? How do you get through it? How do you learn from it? Because if you're going to go through some mucky waters, you might as well, learn something from it.
Right. Absolutely.
Hey everyone, before we continue on with this week's episode, I want to just go over individual coaching sessions with you because I get this question a lot. I do offer individual sessions. So if you, for whatever reason, cannot work with me and do my coaching program, either online or private coaching, where you have me one-on-one for 6 weeks, you can also book an individual coaching session. Within all of my podcast episodes, I always link all of the information below, but if you are not following me on social media, you can find me on Instagram at Stephanie Lynn Coaching. You can also check out the website StephanieLynnLifeCoaching.com for all of the information and how to register for your individual session.
So guys, I think that there are a couple of kind of key points that I just want to touch on just so we can have a good, kind of like list to go off of in terms of, you know, how this impacts you, but really not just how it impacts you to finding a healthy relationship, because we've definitely dove into that. I want to give you some kind of golden nuggets so you can get through this, no matter where you are in the process. If you've just gone to therapy for the first time and you're sitting on the couch for the first time, you've had your first cry about what you've been through and you're actually letting it all out, to the person that has said, you know what, I went through divorce when I was a child and I experienced this traumatic event between my parents and I'm 40 years old and I feel good now. So I need to, and I want to attract a healthy partner. I think like we mentioned, having to go through enough of that mucky water to really find those golden nuggets and learn those lessons is really important. Being willing to do the work, like Angela said, being willing to open the window, I think is really, really huge. And a lot of people are scared of that. Do you see that? That a lot of people don't want to open the window?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, ignorance is bliss, as they say, right? And again, we can keep doing the same thing. And I think what we were saying earlier is, you know, I think the decision to change is different for everybody, right? It's like the doctor telling you to quit smoking. Well, it's not going to be until you get a CAT scan of your lungs and there's spots on there that you're going to be motivated to quit smoking, right? Or lose the weight or whatever the change may be. We're all going to reach this intersection of like pain and motivation to change at a different time, right? And, it was really early for me. It's going to be later for some, or maybe even earlier for others, right? And I think that's different for everyone.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I think that like we've talked about, ignorance is bliss. I love that. I was on the phone with a client the other day and she was like, I just wish I could be ignorant and just not. And I'm like, I know, I hear you. It must be great to just be ignorant. But I do think that, you know, if you cannot open the window all day long, eventually it's just going to burst open. So, and that's what happened to me. The window wasn't open for years and years. I didn't want to touch it. I didn't want to go there. And all of a sudden the damn thing just shattered in front of me. And I was like, okay, it's open now. I guess this is what has to happen. You know, here comes a nervous breakdown. Open the window. And, you know, I always tell people, this stuff doesn't kill you. You know, like it's not fun. Don't get me wrong. At times it's hard work. It's literally the hardest work I've ever had, probably aside from being a mom sometimes. But, you know, it just takes time. And I will say though, the minute you start to get over the hill, and you start to see a little bit of the other side, it's amazing how you're like, I don't want to say why didn't I do this sooner, because everything happens for a reason, but I'm sure you can see that where you're like, wow, I feel better. Like, you know, like life's actually getting better. It's still not where I want it to be. I don't think it'll ever be that way, right? That's the journey. And like you said, that's the process. That's the journey, accepting that. I think that's a great point for everyone listening to remember, is there's no end. You know, because the minute you reach that hill, you're going to come down and there's going to be another hill. So that's life. But, you know, just working on yourself. And, you know, when I started coaching, what I started with was narcissism, because I'd experienced it in my previous marriage. And then it was codependency. Then it was emotional abuse. So I started learning. I wanted to learn all these things and I wanted to help educate people. But then a huge part was, all right, let's just get to the nuts and bolts. I just didn't love myself, you know? And how do I be okay being alone? And how do I be okay with my past? And how do I soothe myself? And, you know, all of those kind of things. So for me, that's been like a huge part of my coaching. And I'm sure it's part of yours as well, is teaching people really, you know, those aspects to self-care.
Yeah, Yeah, I think, you know, especially for, you know, childhood survivors of divorce, but anyone who didn't, you know, again, I don't know anyone who had like the perfect right. childhood, right? I mean, regardless of whether your parents got divorced or not. And, you know, if you're not taught that you're lovable and worthy and good enough as a child, there would be no way for us to expect you to know that as an adult, right? These are not things that just kind of show up one day. If that has been part of the pattern for you from childhood, yeah. this is again going to be maybe a lifelong journey of, again, like you were, I like that analogy of like the peaks and valleys of, there are going to be times when you're really feeling like, yes, I'm rocking life and I'm awesome. And then there's going to be other times where you're like, I suck at life. Right. And that's again, like it's not the prettiest, you know, journey, but if you weren't taught those things, it's like, if you were never taught to tie your shoes, right? Like it's as basic as that. Like, how would you know how to do that as an adult, right? It's, you know, I see it as kind of a foundational thing. And much of therapy and coaching, right, is like teaching people how to do that, right? Especially yeah. if parents were not there or were abusive, neglectful, just not around, right? Or just were not good models and didn't communicate that love and worthiness and, you know, value.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, I get it so often, even, you know, and I know we're talking about divorce and childhood, but and you know this as well, just from your background and your profession, and I'm sure you've talked to many people that have gone through similar experiences, where they say, well, my parents stayed together, you know what I mean, for 50 years or however long, and but they still are going through the exact same things because they saw the same things. And so, but they don't deem it as trauma or unhealthy because they stayed married, because maybe there wasn't crazy yelling and fighting and beer bottles were going all over the place. You know, these really what we think traumatic things. I mean, I know for me personally, when I was a teenager, the only thing I was ever taught was a man shouldn't put his hands on you and man should be able to financially support you, you know, and don't get pregnant. That was just like the three yeah. things that like I was taught. So you go out into the world and you have this programming based on what you saw during childhood of like, okay, when an argument happens, this is how I'm supposed to react. And then you have these like general three guidelines to like, okay, here are my standards. Please don't put your hands on me and please pay for dinner. And that's pretty much about it. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's important that while you go through this process of healing or anything like that, is just get to know yourself, you know, like what's mm-hmm. important to you? What do you value? I think life experience and just self-reflection on your past relationships. What did you like? What did you not like from that person? What weren't they able to give you? I mean, hell, that's all we can really do is just, you know, learn and keep going.
Be with yourself, right? If you can't be friends with yourself and love yourself, then, you know, again, it's corny and people throw this around all the time, but if you don't love you, nobody is going to love you, right? Or nobody is going to love you for who you really are. And, you know, that it might look like a couple years being single, right? Doing the work, doing that self-reflection and learning to just be friends with yourself, right? Treat yourself right. and hang out with yourself. And, you know, again, then partner's going to show up and you're going to be in a place where you feel worthy, right? And you're ready to accept healthy love.
I always tell people, if you're okay being alone, my mother said this to me right as I got divorced, because I was single for 4 years and I'm talking single, like no one's in sight. And I had a little baby, so I had enough on my plate that it was fine. But of course I had those times and moments where I was lonely and everyone's like, you're a good catch. Why are you still alone? And I'm like, you know, and the ex is going off getting married and doing his thing and I'm still here. You know, I'm sure there's lots of people that are listening. They're like, yep, I've experienced that. But she said to me, she goes, don't stay single for too long because you're going to really like it. Mm-hmm. And she was right. By the time I met my now partner, I was at a place where I was like, I really like being single. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You get very used to it. And then, you know, it starts a whole other mess of stuff. Like for you, you found a great yeah. partner that was willing to, you know, stick it out and let you kind of figure this out and do the work or whatever, just love you. Let's just mm-hmm. be frank. And same with me, that now I was like, whoa, this is unfamiliar. I don't know if I mm-hmm. like this. And having that vulnerability to put yourself out there again, you know, and yeah. vulnerability is a huge thing. And I always tell people, you can't learn, you're not going to learn every textbook terminology for whatever. It's just, it's a gamble, you know, and don't overthink it. Just know that what I always tell people, my mantra is whatever happens to me, I'll be okay. Mm-hmm. You know? And I think when you live life like that and you know how to take care of yourself, you don't fear relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I was single for 6 years. I consider graduate school, my PhD program, like my period of celibacy, because I was so busy studying and working that it was like, you know, I had gone to the convent and, you know, written off.
And no one was in sight.
Right, no one. It was just books and work, and that was it, right? It was, and, you know, again, life is at that point full enough to where you don't even have time for anybody. But, and then I met my current partner, and he, you know, things moved fast. And, you know, he reminds me of a moment like early on in our relationship where he was spending the night and, you know, I was like, are you going to go home yet? Like, and again, I think that just ties into what you were saying about you get used to being alone and then you're like, okay, what is this person doing in my space? And, you know, when are you leaving?
Well, and I think you also, yes, aside from when are you leaving, but I also think you're not needy. You know, you're not, that codependency starts to go away. And I think that you start to raise the bar a little bit, because when you're if there's no fear of being alone, then the bar is going to come up a little higher. When you have a fear of being alone, then you just take whatever comes along. You're just like, okay, you're just here and you're treating me awful and I'm unhealthy too. Cool. Like, as long as I have someone. So yeah, standards are everything. Well, my dear, thank you so much. If you guys knew how long it has taken us to do this podcast for you. I'm so excited that we got the chance to do this. I think this is a really, honestly, important topic that I think 99% of people go through, whether you've actually gone through divorce as a child or not. Just the impact that these things happen in our childhood have on our, you know, adult lives is really important. So I hope that you guys have learned a lot from this. I will link everything down below in terms of how to reach out to Angela for coaching or any, she does group coaching. Definitely go check her out. I will link her website below. And thank you guys so much.
So that about wraps it up. Thanks guys so much for all of your support. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode and I will see you next week.